Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Charlie Cook of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. And Charlie, as usual, we start with the good. What people probably thought was going to be our good martini is actually coming a little bit later. But the good martini today is that Hillary Clinton still has no idea why she should be president, even though she probably will still run. She had a very garbled answer last week to what's your most significant accomplishment as Secretary of State. This week she was asked again by Tom Friedman of the New York Times, certainly a sympathetic interviewer, and she still didn't really have a good answer. She kind of meandered around, Charlie, saying that I really see my role as secretary and, in fact, leadership in general in a democracy is a relay race. You run the best race you can. You hand off the baton. Some of what hasn't been finished may go on to be finished. And then she went on to talk, generally speaking, about how the Obama administration inherited the worst economy since the Great Depression and so on and so forth. So basically, she really still can't hang her hat on anything, and that's not only good news for eventually the Republican nominee, but anybody looking to chip away at her before we get to that matchup.
That sentence or statement or whatever it was that you just read is one of the most incoherent things I've ever heard in my life. It sounds like Eric Holder. This matters only in the sense that Hillary Clinton is held up to be experienced and ready. I mean, the Ready for Hillary bumper stickers imply that it's time we had a woman, which is really the best case for her. But the talking heads imply that she is qualified. Now, I don't particularly like this idea that you can put down on paper what qualifications a president should have. And Scott Walker, for example, did not finish college. Should that disqualify him? I don't think so. And some of our best presidents left school when they were 12. And Abraham Lincoln was largely self-taught, for example, and many great politicians have come not from politics or from anything approximating it and done very well. But it matters when we see politicians dismissed for a lack of experience, Sarah Palin, for example, and other politicians lauded for experience, that there really is no great case for Hillary Clinton beyond you agree with her politics, and that's a fine case. If you think you want a woman president, if you think she's nice, if you think she's got the right positions, that's absolutely fine. But being married to the president for 8 years and being a carpet-bagging senator for a few and then being a pretty uneventful secretary of state do not constitute a political platform. And it's nice to see that nobody can answer that question.
Charlie, she seems to be hitching her wagon still to the Obama star. Obviously, among the Democratic base, that's probably not a bad idea. But as we keep going along, is that going to be a tougher proposition for her if his numbers don't improve?
It's going to be tough for her to win the White House if the left can't turn her into a cult icon. She is already being fated, as I say, as the one. But you can't always contrive that. You can't always construct an icon and a hero and a cult leader in a laboratory. Trying to pick up Barack Obama's vapors, I'm not sure, as you imply, that's a great idea given the way the economy has remained during his presidency and Obamacare is still polling, but she won't be able to ride his coattails on their own. She would have to be turned into the next Democratic star. Now, there is a sizable pro-Hillary contingent in the country, but it's certainly not enough to win an election. And I wrote a piece about this a year ago saying the attempt to turn her into a cult icon is coming. You saw it with those T-shirts, you remember, with her face on it, trying to sort of posterize her in the way we had that hope poster with Obama. I wrote at the time, I'm not completely convinced it's going to work. So she doesn't want to be in a position where she's relying on Barack Obama to try and win the White House, no.
Well, she's such a known commodity, too. Obama was obviously the fresh face on the scene, so rebranding her
right
when so many people already have their opinion set of her, it could be very difficult. All right, on to the bad martini now, and most conservatives are plenty thrilled to see Kathleen Sebelius go. Many people, of course, would point to her bungling of healthcare.gov, the way she's ruled HHS with an iron fist, making a lot of decisions in terms of the discretion given to the secretary as it relates to the implementation of Obamacare, her less than truthful statements to Congress and the media and all sorts of other things. So, Charlie, while conservatives are happy to see her go, I think when you look at the larger view, her contribution, quote unquote, to American society is going to be a pretty substantial negative.
Oh, certainly so. And ongoing, the position of HHS secretary while Obamacare is in place is a negative for American liberty and American constitutional democracy. Philip Klein of the Washington Examiner had a good piece last night in which he argued that Republicans should take the opportunity here not just to point out that Obamacare is a disaster. I mean, it is, to digress for a moment, it is very, very difficult, whether this is fair or not, for the resignation of a secretary to be spun as good news. You know, low information voters just hear, well, the secretary has resigned, and that always makes it seem as if they've done something wrong. People who are used to hearing bad news about Obamacare will associate this resignation with that bad news, whether that's fair again or not, and whatever the president says. So, you know, it's very difficult for them. But going forward, Republicans should not just be pointing to what it is that Kathleen Sebelius did or didn't do and what failures she was responsible for, but they should be, as Philip Klein argues, tying her to the position and pointing out that that position has far too much power. You know, that it's not really just about Kathleen Sebelius, it's anybody, that you can't and shouldn't try to run a health insurance economy from Washington and from one office. And, you know, our criticisms of Obamacare outside of the basic and legitimate and I think right philosophical questions are the number of times, for example, in the legislation that it says the secretary shall, the secretary may, the secretary can. American liberty is not supposed to work like that. That sort of delegation is dangerous. So if they're smart, Republicans will not just point to Kathleen Sebelius, but to what she represented and why that's dangerous.
On to the crazy martini now, Charlie, and this one comes from the Illinois State Legislature. There was an education reform bill being debated, and Democratic State Representative Linda Chapa Lavia, who is Hispanic, was delivering a speech that was pretty heavily critical of charter schools. She tried to make a point about which party has the most minorities represented in Springfield, Illinois, and it ended up like this.
What we find is there's a lot of issues coming up in newspapers saying how they're underperforming or their expulsion rate is high, their suspension rate is high. There's starting to become a segregation of children between the haves and the have-nots. Listen to me, minorities. I'm over here because we're all over on this side, right? What you'll also find, well, we have a half.
And that half is referring to Republican State Representative John Anthony, who is black. Charlie, for the party that supposedly is so much more mature on racial issues, pretty shocking.
Well, it's not shocking, I think, is the worrying part of it. The left has the view that it is on the side of the angels on race, and that makes their day-to-day explanation of race entirely malleable. There's always a reason. For a start, it's absurd to hear somebody say, and I've noticed this creep in, that charter schools are somehow racist or disproportionately a negative for minorities. As a Florida state representative who was making that case with Ed Schultz on MSNBC a couple of weeks ago, and he literally said that it was an attempt to get at black people. Well, if you, where I am in New York now, if you went out and you asked Hispanic and black families what they think of charter schools, and you know, they're running commercials crying because de Blasio isn't supportive of them. It's a bizarre inversion. As for the half-black thing, we saw this with George Zimmerman. Now, regardless of what one thinks of George Zimmerman, and I was more critical of him than most conservatives, but he was Hispanic. He is Hispanic, and Trayvon Martin was black. And in order to make it seem like a racial morality play, they invented this term white Hispanic. The president, by Ms. Chapa Lavia's own logic, is also half a black person. Is that how we should refer to him? Is that how we should see him? Is that a legitimate criticism to throw at him? More to the point, of course, I'm not at all black. I'm completely white. Does that mean that I'm wrong on charter schools? Is that how we're going to run our our republic now. So we go into Congress and we just line people up on either side of the aisle and presume that the sum of their experiences and the color of their skin determines how they should vote. If the half a black person had been on her side, I imagine they would have been black. And if the half a black person had been on the other side, then of course they're mostly white. And that comes from an obsessive racial ideology that presumes that the only question that matters is the color of your skin. And it's pretty depressing when you look back at what Martin Luther King, no conservative by any stretch of the imagination, but was actually trying to achieve.
Charlie, when you think of the racial progress that a lot of people hoped would be made in this administration, this obviously isn't obviously tied back to the president, this particular comment, but when you think of the rhetoric that we've seen over the past 5+ years, how disappointing is that?
I just didn't think it was going to particularly change anything, if I'm honest. I mean, it was remarkable and very moving to see a black man elected president of the United States in just a little over, well, a little under, I suppose, 50 years since the end of segregation, or the beginning of the end of segregation. That's a remarkable thing. But politics is a dirty game. And if Hillary Clinton, to go back to our first topic, is elected president, we will spend however long she spends it in office talking about sexism and misogyny, and all criticism will suddenly become that. That's just the way that the left behaves in politics. And I'm less surprised than most Americans about how it's gone with Obama, because that's how I pretty much anticipated it would go. And I would just say that I think Obama's sort of racial healing qualities will probably be much more likely to manifest themselves once he's left office. Because then it will be, well, look, we had a black president for 2 terms and so on, and people won't feel the need to put out press releases and fundraising emails every day suggesting that opposition to him is racist, and people will get a little bit more perspective, I suppose.
That'll be nice.
Yeah. So then we can talk about sexism instead, of course.
Yes, exactly. Charlie, thanks for filling in for Jim. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Absolutely. Talk to you then.
Have a great weekend. Charlie Cook of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us. Have a wonderful weekend, and be sure to join Charlie and me on Monday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.